Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The Volume.
All right, the NBA season is in full swing. Coming down the stretch. Then we move right into the playoffs in April, May, and June. I can't wait. Spice things up with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA right now. All you have to do is put down $5 and get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Pretty good trade-off. I pay $5, I get $150. North Carolina listeners, do not forget. Welcome to the party. DraftKings Sportsbook now live in your state, North Carolina. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Takes 90 seconds. The code is Colin, C-O-L-I-N. Again, 90 seconds. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app. Put in Colin. New customers bet $5, get $150 back in bonus bets instantly. That is the trade. All right? The code is always Colin. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. We got this first round wrapping up. Some games that we thought would wrap, our series would wrap, others that did. And we will get into that. I am excited about these games. We got a couple games going 6, which is, I think, exciting because we had a couple sweeps in the first round. No one except the people providing the sweep ever really enjoys those. Been on the good side of those, and they are fun. You get a nice little break, get the reset, you know, and in the playoffs, you'll take that rest. So, we'll talk about those. However, we are back live on Bleacher Report. So shout out to all of you that are tuning in and listening to this. Please make sure you drop your questions in the chat box so we can get to those before we get out of here. And then also, for those of you out there, make sure if you have not, you subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@DraymondGreenShow. Tap into that, lock in, subscribe. We appreciate you. We love you. Let's get into it. 76ers versus the Knicks. 112-106 in overtime. And I actually rewatched this game last night. And I, you know, my wife had asked me, she was like, who won this game? And at that time, it was 97-92 with maybe like a minute and some change left. And she was like, let me guess. And she went through it. And she's like, did Philly win? And I'm like, yeah, they actually did. And so we're watching it. And when you see some of the shots down the stretch that the Knicks hit, you're like, oh, it's over right there, right? Like, And so, you know, we're watching it, and she's like, well, I'm just trying to see where the game changed. Like how did they win? Like, all of a sudden, OG goes to the free throw line. He misses one free throw down the stretch. He missed the first one. And she's like, oh, this is where it changed. He make the second one, right? And so they go up 6 points. Where it really took a turn is Tyrese Maxey's four-point play. Maxey got the four-point play. He got Mitchell Robinson to leave his feet. Very, very, very smart play by Tyrese Maxey, because in that situation, like in most situations, you know Mitchell Robinson is going to leave his feet. He's a shot blocker. Most shot blockers with the makeup of Mitchell Robinson, they are jumping. Like, it's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They've been taught their whole life, when somebody shoots the ball, you try to block it. And they jump for everything. And so it's to the benefit. However, when you get out on the perimeter, it gets a little bit dicey, because if you leave your feet a little bit on the perimeter, the offensive player is getting the benefit of the doubt. I never understand why it's so much different when you leave your feet on the perimeter as opposed when you leave your feet in the paint. Still shooting the basketball. One person's jumping and shooting the ball. And yet it's always officiated totally different. So, and getting Mitchell Robinson out to the three-point line, Tyrese Maxey, very hezzy play. He shot fakes him. What does Mitchell Robinson do? He starts to jump and move forward. Well, instinct kicking, can't jump right there. But it's a little too late. Tyrese Maxey gets the four-point play. All of a sudden, they're no longer down six. Two-possession game, and those two possessions needing two threes. They are now coming back down. They only need a two if they can get a stop. Well, Maxey down the stretch was huge. Knicks come down, miss another free throw, and they go up three, and Maxey comes down. Miss one, make one. Maxey comes down and logo them boys. Pulls up from the logo. And quite frankly, it was no surprise to me that Maxey had the game that he had. 46 points, 9 assists, 17 for 30 from the field, 17 for 12 from the three. And the reason it was no surprise to me, because if you actually go back to my Twitter, I tweeted and I said half of the Philly players are like competing and trying to win, and half of them quit. And if you watch, like, it was very evident of who were the players that quit and who were the guys that was going for it, who were the players that believed. And Maxey was right at the front leading the charge of the players that was going for it. And he was dialed in on both sides of the ball. He was 100 miles per hour the entire game, getting pressure on the rim, shot the three very well. Like, he played well, and you saw some guys following, but you saw the body language on some of their guys. And some, like, it just wasn't there. So even to start the game, like, you could tell the nerves were there to start the game. Some of the shots Philly took, and the Knicks, but some of the shots that Philly were taking in those first 7 to 10 possessions, just watching it, like, what? Like, why? And like I said, when you get into it in a closeout game, the nerves are high for both teams. One team, our season could be over, and you're nervous about that. But yet you do get some guys going out like, we got nothing to lose. This is it. And that's the demeanor that Tyrese Maxey had going into and to start the game yesterday. And so I'm watching and I'm like, all right, Maxey feel like he got nothing to lose. Like, he playing free. Like, and quite frankly, he carried Joel yesterday. Obviously, Joel draws a lot of attention. He ended up with a triple-double, although had 9 turnovers. Maxey was the guy. Kelly Oubre played some big minutes. Also, that finish Kelly Oubre had under the rim where Joel kind of lobbed it up and Kelly got caught under the rim and was still able to finish. That was a huge play. But anyway, Tyrese Maxey. And then also, there were some possessions, and I don't know if it was just cross matches. I don't know if it was intentional. They were trying to throw different looks at Jalen Brunson. But there were some possessions where Maxey was guarding Brunson and, like, taking on that challenge. And I thought that was very interesting. So it was great to see Maxey had a game that he had in the Garden on that stage. In a game where, yeah, Joel finished with 19, 16, 10 assists. But it wasn't a Joel type game. I think if you ask me, he struggled well. And where it's unfortunate when you, if you're Mitchell Robinson, where you get the foul to kind of turn the game towards the end, Mitchell Robinson was a large reason why they were in the position that they were in, because he played really well against Joel yesterday. And, you know, he had some good defensive plays, caught some good lobs. Having that rim threat or that lob threat at the rim is always important. I've spoke to you all about that and what it does for the spacing. And so I thought Mitchell Robinson played a really good game. Like I said, it's unfortunate that he had that play down the stretch on the defensive end, but he played a really good game. And so Maxey did a lot of the carrying last night. So in going into game six, you expect to see a very, very, very intentional, aggressive Joel Embiid. One of the things that I noticed in the game the other day was all of a sudden Joel was no longer in that drop at the rim. When Jalen Brunson was coming off pick and rolls, and no, he was not at the level and kind of almost in the blitz every play, because it's a reason he played a drop. Like, it's hard as hell for a 7 foot, 300 pounder to get up to the level of screen, blitz the screen. He has to get back in there and rebound. So you're sprinting back every play. Like, that's a tall task. However, they have to do that. You can't just let Jalen Brunson get downhill and get to his spot. It's not going to work. And so I thought that was very interesting, or not very interesting. I think it's what needed to be done. But I noticed that right away, that Joel had moved up to the level of that screen. And initially, Jalen Brunson got off to a bad start. Now, he ended up finishing the game from the second quarter on really strong. If I'm not mistaken, he may not have scored in the first quarter. And if he did, he had 2 points, 4 points, something like that. It wasn't a very impactful first quarter for him, but that second quarter, he got it going and he rode the rest of the game. You all knew my back and forth that you all know my back and forth that I went through the other day about Jalen Brunson on kind of all of these things I'm trying to put together. And so we will get back into that a little bit. Number one, I love Jalen Brunson as a player. He is a guy who, you know, when you see him having the success that he's having, it's not a surprise to me that he's having success. And the reason it's not a surprise to me, because if you watch Jalen Brunson at any point in his life, pre-NBA, he always had success. All-American, won 2 national championships in college. That's never really spoke about. But to win 2 national championships in college is incredible and nearly impossible. That's why only maybe 7 or 8 teams has done that. They didn't go back-to-back, but they had a year in between. But to win 2 is crazy. And so he's always been a winner. To say that anyone thought he'd have the level of success that he had, I think most people would be lying. Now, when I look at that, though, I am a little tilted on that, because I am kind of a microcosm of the same exact thing, which is a guy who had success, a lot of success in college. I didn't have the opportunity to win a national championship, let alone 2 like Jalen Brunson, but you know, to see a guy dominate in college like that and then just be like, oh, it's the NBA now, get him out of here. Like, he's not a first-round pick, blah, blah. Again, that's my story. So I got nothing but love for Jalen Brunson. But like I said, and going into it and knowing what it takes to get to the mountaintop, that's where my questions have been. And so you look at this game, Jalen Brunson, 15 for 32 from the field. 4 for 11 from 3, only 6 assists as opposed to the 10 or 11 assists he had in game 4. And, you know, what I've spoke about is I don't love the ball-dominant Jalen Brunson. And the reason I don't love that is, A, I think it's too easy to guard. Not that Jalen Brunson is easy to guard, but just every time down the court, like, you know, our defense need to load up. Or if you're deciding we're just letting him come downhill with 2 guys guarding, we're keeping everybody else home to keep the other guys out of it, to keep the other guys limited in what they're bringing to the game. Whatever that game plan is, ultimately, you know, it's on the coach to decide what they think is is going to beat them what they think gives them the best chance to win. I don't necessarily love the ball dominant Jalen Brunson. I just don't think you can win at the level that they want to win at doing that. I just think they need to move the ball around. They need to get more guys involved. You know, when they were winning and like dominating, when they are winning and dominating, I should say, Dante DiVincenzo is playing great. Dante DiVincenzo is rolling. I've had the opportunity to play with Dante last year here with the Warriors, and Dante is very much so a rhythm and confidence guy. You get Dante confidence going, you give him confidence, you allow him to get a rhythm, he's going to play hard defensively. He's going to cut, shoots the ball really well, good slasher to the rim. He rolls. When you don't necessarily give Dante confidence, it's a little more of a struggle. When you don't show him that belief, I wouldn't necessarily say give him confidence. He's a confident guy. But when you don't necessarily show him that belief, he struggles a little bit more. And he had 9 points yesterday. If you look at their season over the last 2 months, he's pretty much been averaging 20. And so when I look at that, to me, and yes, he finished 3 for 10, 1 for 7 from three. Quite frankly, those shots are a lot different when they're just coming in the flow. You know, when they're just coming in the rhythm, as opposed to like, I catch it. Like, oh, now it's time for me to, like, oh, now I shoot it. And you're not in that rhythm. And like I said, Dante is very much so a rhythm guy. You know, and so I think Jalen has to get everybody else involved. Going on the road, yes, it's going to take a heroic performance from Jalen to close out this series at Philly. But like I told y'all last episode, Philly does have the best player on the floor in Joel Embiid. Not necessarily playing the best, but at any given moment, he is the best for sure. And so, as I said before, that always gives you an opportunity to come back. Obviously down 3-1. Now, it's interesting what happened in these series when a team go up, when a team has the lead, can possibly close out and then don't. Because every game you go further into that series, the pressure flips. And so for a New York Knicks team that don't have a ton of playoff experience, OG is a champion, but very young in his career, winning a championship. Josh Hart, not a ton of playoff experience, not a whole bunch of playoff experience. Hardenstein, not a bunch of playoff experience at all. Jalen Brunson has got some playoff experience, although not a ton as the guy that he is now. And then Dante has some playoff experience with the Bucks, but was kind of a little banged up during a couple of their runs. And so, not a ton of playoff experience. Mitchell Robinson, not much. And Miles McBride, not much. So the pressure flips. Now, with those guys not having a ton of experience, sometimes you go into it like they're oblivious to the moment. I don't think that's this group. I think this group has enough experience to not be oblivious to the moment. And sometimes being oblivious to the moment actually helps you, because it's almost like irrational confidence. Like, you're so oblivious to the moment, you don't even realize, like, the stakes. You don't even realize the pressure that should be on you, but because you're not processing the moment, you're not even feeling that pressure. I don't think that's this Knicks team, because they do have enough experience to know that, hey, man, we don't want to go 7, right? So this series is now going 6 and it's headed back to Philly. And I must say, that's a danger zone for the Knicks. That is a complete danger zone, because you're going to be expected to go lose on the road. Like, that's just what it is. And you should go lose on the road when the other opposing team has one all-star and also the MVP of the NBA. You should go lose. So Philly, you're supposed to win this game. However, Philly's going in like, hey, man, we face elimination. We're down 3-1. We just free swings. And that same timid Philly of some of the guys that I think you saw last night won't be there in game six. Game six, they're going to come out with their chest poked out, feeling good about themselves. Like, yo, we go win this game. We taking it back for game seven at the Garden. Right? And like game sevens are magical. Game sevens at the Garden, I can only imagine the feeling that that gives. And so the pressure in game six is all, and I mean all, on the New York Knicks. And sometimes guys don't deal with that pressure well. And so I think, you know, the Knicks has to deal with that. But like I said before, I think Philly's going to win this series. I think they should take it. I think they can take it. And we'll see. Because here's the thing. If I'm the New York Knicks, got to be a little careful. Like, we got to go in here and win this game. Like, this is a must win. Because if you don't go win a must win, although you do got one more game, if you really made this a must win mentally, coming out of that and you lost, it's going to be tough to bounce back for game seven for the Knicks. And so if I'm Tom Thibodeau, if I'm Jalen Brunson, the leader of that team, I'm pushing it as close to the line of, yo, we got to go win this game. Like, we need to close this series out without quite stepping over of, like, this is, like, we got to win this game. Like, I'm not quite stepping over there, but I'm pushing it to as close to that line as I can, because you understand that game seven is a coin flip. Always. It's a coin flip. And they just don't know. Philly can come out and hit 23 threes. All of a sudden, you lose because they shot the lights out. Like, you just don't know what's going to happen in the game seven. And so, as fun as they are, you don't want to get there. You just don't want to get there. And especially in a situation where you were up 3-1, you don't want to get there, because it just don't always go your way. I've seen it, been a part of it on both sides of game sevens. It don't always go your way. And so Philly needs to win this game tomorrow. I think that's going to be a little less Jalen Brunson ball dominance, although he needs to be great. He's going to have to find that balance. And also, with Philly, another interesting thing that they did before I move on from this is watch out for that zone that they ran. They almost ran like a matchup zone, dropping Joel all the way into the back to give him a break so he didn't have to be at the level on all of those screens. And I thought that matchup zone gave Philly problems. If I am Nick Nurse, I'm expecting that Tibbs is going to overly prepare for that zone. Not so much for their half-court defense. They're going to overly prepare for that zone to beat that zone. And I don't run as much of it if I'm Nick Nurse. Go to it a couple times if it's working, cool. But you go to it first couple times and they dice it up because they're so prepared for it, like, you nix it because you know they're overly prepared for that. And they may not be as prepared for your half-court man defense. And so be fun to watch the coaches play this game. As you get deeper into this series, the chess match really begins and you got adjustments being made. And so I think that's an adjustment that New York has to make. They got to be ready for that zone Philly was playing, keeping Joel in the back of the defense, letting all the guards and wing handle the pick and rolls. I thought it was pretty successful. Haven't seen any numbers from it, the analytics. But from the naked eye, it looked pretty successful. So we'll see what happens with that, but that is something to watch for in that series. And by the way, I got Philly in game six. So that's that. Moving forward, Cavaliers take a 3-2 lead with the Magic. The home team has won each game in this series, and I don't see that changing in game six. The Cavs did take last night without Jared Allen. Not sure what, you know, if he's out, you know, next game or two or what his situation is, but they did take last night after him and without him. And quite frankly, this series, I got the Cavs winning this series. I think it does go seven. As I said before, seven is always a coin flip. I got the Cavs winning the series. I really don't see either one of these teams going on the road and winning the game. I think the home team win these games. Cavs take game seven. And that is going to be kind of the wrap for that series. But I think neither one of them are going on the road and win. Orlando had a great opportunity last night. They let it get away. Got to win the ones when you have those opportunities in the playoffs, young playoff team. Although they played that well in Gary Harris didn't shoot the ball well, had 0 points. G's not going to shoot like that again. So, but you still need other guys getting off, and you got to go in facing elimination now. First time this team has faced elimination. Haven't seen this. It's their first experience. So how do these guys show up at home, right? Do they show up firing like we got nothing to lose? Do they show up at home a little tight? That's always possible as well. But I got the Magic taking game six and then Cavs taking game seven. We'll see how it goes. But the biggest question is, how do these two teams fare versus the Boston Celtics if Porzingis isn't back? And quite frankly, both of these teams are losing if Porzingis is back. It's not back. Or is back. It don't matter. Boston mopping both of these teams. That's just my opinion. I don't think either one of these teams have a big that makes the Porzingis loss huge. Where it can affect if you're playing against the Magic is how much Fran and Paolo gets downhill. All of a sudden, you don't have Porzingis as a rim protector, and they're getting downhill more. However, Boston has a great deal of length. They also have great perimeter defenders, and so it'll be a little tougher to get downhill. But I also don't think the Magic are moving forward. But yeah, I think this Boston team is winning this next round pretty easily without Porzingis. I don't think it's a rush for Porzingis to have to get back for this next series. Do all that you can to get yourself ready for the conference finals, because it'll be more needed then. Although I think the real test is, regardless of either one of these series they have left in the Eastern Conference, get ready for the finals, KP. That's the most important thing. Probably, yeah, he needs some games under his belt and all of that. But Boston getting through the East, no problem. So get ready for the finals. That can also change if in the conference finals, Philly does win and get to the conference finals, and now you got Joel. But quite frankly, I don't think Porzingis can guard Joel anyway. Yes, it does help to throw another body out there, but who Joel is going to have to face most and see if he can get by is Al Horford. Al Horford has given Joel all problems. So when you look at it and you do like an addition by subtraction, KP being out in the conference finals, if they were to face Philly, could actually help them.
It's almost a good thing.
You play more Al, and Al guards Joel very well. Wishful thinking, I'm getting way ahead of myself. Don't even know if any of those series are take place. The moral of the story is, whoever wins this Cleveland series, between Cleveland and the Magic, don't stand a chance versus Boston. We're moving on to the other two teams in the Eastern Conference.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't me?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 Podcast. You'll know when you get it. It'll say eBay, authenticity, guarantee. You'll feel it. because when it comes to your feet, eBay has your back. Maybe it's that head-turning pair for hooping or a hot new collab. Whatever you're after, when you cop on eBay, you can trust that your kicks will be checked by experts, not just any expert. Sneaker experts who live and breathe the culture. Real people with real hands-on authentication experience. That's when Blue Checkmark represents on our listing. eBay Authenticity Guarantee, meaning every inch, stitch, sole, logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. So when you finally step into those grill kicks, you'll realize the feeling is unlike any other. And with eBay Authenticity Guarantee, the feeling of real is always within reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Patrick Beverly went back to Chicago Marshall on y'all. Got it going. And really affected the game and turned the game to where Milwaukee was then able to take off. Obviously, Bobby Portis got off 29. Obviously, Chris Middleton got off with 29. Bobby Portis being ejected from game four, as you can see by the results of game five, was huge for the Bucks because Bobby Portis is someone that when they have guys out or even when their guys are playing, what he brings for that team from an energy standpoint, what he brings from a scoring standpoint, is really something that they don't have from anyone else. And so Bobby Portis is huge. Was disappointed that Bobby Portis got kicked out for the little scuffle that he did, but nobody was kicked out of those games yesterday. The consistency, I just don't understand. Now, I did agree that guys shouldn't have gotten thrown out because if you don't have to throw somebody out of a playoff game, you don't. Like, we want these games to be decided based up on the players on the court, not the referee calling someone or throwing somebody out of game. So a little disappointed that Bobby got thrown out the game, but you look at the stuff that was going on yesterday in these games and nobody's thrown out. One technical, Mitchell Robinson threw Kelly down, actually almost jacked up Joel's leg. He was this close from landing on Joel's leg and taking it in this way. And then all of a sudden, right? So Mitchell Robinson throw Kelly Oubre. He lands on Joel's ankle, hit the knee or something, and Joel's hurt. Then all of a sudden, Mitchell Robinson gets thrown out of the game. Because Joel didn't get hurt at all, Mitchell Robinson actually didn't even get a technical foul, I don't think. And I just don't understand it. Like, what's the consistency? So if he got hurt, then it's something. I don't get that. Like, either it's something or it isn't. You can't judge these things by the results of the play and be like, oh, man, that guy got hurt. Like, we got to do something. Okay, this guy didn't get hurt. It's fine. Like, and nowhere in the rule book does it say that's how these things should be officiated. You got to pick a side. Like, we're doing this. We're doing that. Like, it can't be, all right, this time it's this time. And it changes based on the personalities and the games. Like, it can't be that. Like, it's either one way or it's the other. And so I think we need to see some consistency on that front. Either you're kicking guys out or you're not. Quite frankly, I sit on the side of you shouldn't be kicking guys out, but it can't be one day Bobby Portis getting a little brush up and he's out. And then nobody else the next day, nothing happens. So we'll love to see some consistency there. But and speaking of this game going back six, or the series going to six and going back to Indiana, if there's no Dame, I don't think there's a chance we see Giannis. This series is over in six. I don't think Milwaukee can do what they did at home with neither one of those two guys and go on the road and win like they did in game six. And so if no Dame, if no Giannis, I got this series ending. I think they play tomorrow, and I got the series ending. Lastly, before we take a couple questions and get out of here, obviously the Lakers were eliminated by the Denver Nuggets. On Monday, was fun to watch Jamal Murray in that series, despite a bum calf, despite all the things they were up against, despite pretty much losing the entire series. And when I say losing the entire series, I mean, if you look at the margin or the amount of time that the Lakers led in the series very much so could have been flipped. 4-1 for the Lakers. However, Jamal Murray's heroics is a large reason why that's not the case. There was so much coming out of the Lakers. Well, before we talk about them, let's talk about the Nuggets. The Nuggets took the series, but I think they're in trouble. And the reason I think they're in trouble, and I said this before, I just don't think their bench is good enough. And we saw that again the other night. Like, they're just not getting enough from their bench. And as you move forward, I think the difference in this Minnesota-Denver series could be the bench. You got Naz Reid coming off the bench, can play huge minutes. Kyle Anderson coming off. Monte Morris, who's a great backup point guard that they're not really using much but can use. Nickeil Alexander-Walker, who's been playing great basketball. Like, I just think the depth of the Timberwolves is going to give Denver problems. And, yes, the matchup between Joker and Rudy Gobert trying to guard him is huge. But I've always told you guys, you win championships 6-10, not 1-5. And the Denver Nuggets 1-5 is as strong, if not stronger, than any other 1-5 in the league. But their 6-10 is as weak as any team left in the playoffs. And I just don't know if they're going to be able to overcome that, especially against these Minnesota Timberwolves, who just had an incredible showing. And I think they're poised to try to make a deeper run, and they're feeling that, and they want that. And so that'll be an interesting series. Personally, I got the Timberwolves winning that series, I think. But we'll get into that later in the week, my predictions. I need to analyze a little bit more and, like, actually sit down and do the matchups of what I think will be and look at all these things. But quite frankly, just off the top of the dome, I think Minnesota should win that series. Interesting stuff coming out of the Lakers organization. Obviously, Bron set to possibly opt out of his contract and become a free agent for the first time since 2018. I think that is a very interesting thing, because what that means is, if you know anything about cap, is LeBron could opt out of that deal, be a free agent. They could sign somebody with cap space and then sign LeBron back using bird rights, which means they could possibly add a third star or a couple really good players at $15 million a year or so and better their team. They could also decide that they're not spending that money and going into the tax with all these tax penalties. I think it'll be interesting to see. I think a lot of that will be dependent on what LeBron decides. We obviously see the reports of the Lakers may draft Bronny. I think that would be amazing, by the way. Absolutely incredible. But that's neither here nor there. I think the Lakers, they really got to decide what it is that they want to do, though. Like, are you comfortable going into next season with pretty much the same supporting cast that you have? And LeBron and AD, are you comfortable going in that way? If LeBron decides to leave, what do you do then? Do you then trade AD? Like, I think there's a lot of uncertainty coming out of that organization. What's going to happen with Darvin Ham? Me personally, I think it'll be wrong to fire him for multiple reasons. However, you know, they'll get a lot, he'll catch a lot of flack for the season that they had, but their roster didn't get better than last year and they were a play-in team. Yeah, they made it to the conference finals with LeBron James and Anthony Davis playing the way that they were playing, but they didn't get better. They lost Dennis Schroeder. I don't think they replaced him well. Gabe Vincent didn't bring anything to the season. Obviously, he was hurt. But even once he got in there, like, he didn't shoot the ball well. Schroeder was huge for them. And they lost him. And so I don't think the roster got better, but yet you expected better results. And I just don't understand that. But everybody will blame Darvin Ham, like, oh, it's his fault. And, like, is it really? Like, just because they went on a pretty decent run after they mustered up some energy after the trade deadline and got to the conference finals, got swept, their season was their season. And yeah, you got through the trade deadline and you found some energy, but then you come back into the season with that team and I don't think the belief was very high in the first place. Yeah, we could say the belief is high, but I don't think it was very high in the first place. And I don't think that team got much better. Obviously, Vando missing majority of the season is a killer. Obviously, Gabe Vincent missing majority of the season could have been a killer, although we don't really know because we've only seen him in Miami. And we've seen guys leave Miami and it not be the same thing that it was in Miami. So the jury's out on that one. Nonetheless, I don't think they got much better. And so I'm not surprised by the year they had. But I'm looking forward to what's to come of this summer. Some people think it's a foregone conclusion that Bron is going back to the Lakers. I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion. I think if there was something that came about that was interesting, I think he'd look at it. But ultimately, I don't quite see him leaving LA. Just don't really see it. Just my opinion. But we shall see. What happens with that? I don't know. Hopefully they don't just fire Darvin as if it's his fault and no one else's fault. I think that's garbage. But that's neither here nor there. And we shall see what happens in the Lakers organization. But I definitely think some changes are coming. I don't know where those changes will be, but they're definitely coming because it's the Lakers. They want to win, and that's just the standard. So we shall see. But before we get out of here, I'm going to toss it to Jackson for a few questions, mailbag questions, before we go.
From at Killa Cam, what do you think of Paolo Banchero in this series so far?
Well, what I think of Paolo Banchero is exactly what I thought of Paolo Banchero back when Paolo Banchero was about to get drafted, which is he is one of those guys that changes an organization. If you go back to the podcast episode of when right before Paolo got drafted, Paolo was the guy who I thought was the number one pick, hands down. A lot of people were talking to other guys. Paolo is showing that. I am one of the guys. And yes, Paolo has some things that I think he needs to get better at. He needs to become more comfortable shooting the ball. And as he do that, I think his game really opens up as he becomes more comfortable with his jump shot. But Paolo is a monster. What he's doing, he's leading these guys now. What can really set this series off for Paolo is if they go win game six and then he can take them on the road and win a game seven. That really, in my opinion, puts Paolo in a different tier. No, not the top tier because he's got a long ways to go to get to that. Although I think he's more than capable of being in that top tier, guys. But if Paolo is to go win game six, then take that team on the road and lead them to a game seven win in Cleveland, you got to bump his tier up and the respect has to go up. I think he's been very special in this series, but in order to be one of the guys that he wants to be, that I think he's capable of being, he has to be able to go get one on the road. This is his first crack at it, so it's not like, oh, Paolo is a bust and blah, blah, if he don't go win one on the road in this particular series. But as he moves forward in his career, that's something that he's going to have to do in order to take that next step. And I don't think it's impossible for him to do it this time, but he's playing a great series.
From at Jamie CU, what do you think is the most underrated factor for a deep playoff run?
Jamie CU. Is that like Colorado University or is that like Jamie S-E-E?
It is C-U, letter C-U. So maybe Colorado, I'm not sure.
Wow, prime time got everybody repping that C-U like it's Michigan State or something. Shout out to Coach Prime. Say that question one more time.
The most underrated factor for a deep run. I can tell you, it took a second. Most underrated factor for a deep playoff run.
Most underrated factor for a deep playoff run. I think the most underrated factor for a deep playoff run is can your coach make adjustments or not? I think that is extremely important. And then also, are your players capable of handling those adjustments? Because sometimes you get in these situations where a coach want to make an adjustment and they're like, I don't think our guys can handle that adjustment. For instance, in the playoffs in 2022, when we start sending all the Boston guys left, it was against our defensive rules. And so Mike Brown was kind of like, it's going to break our defense down because guys aren't accustomed to sending the ball middle on the right side of the floor. We're accustomed to icing it and the defense pulling over. Now we're going to be sending the middle. Guys ain't going to know where the help coming from. And we was just like, and so a couple of us, like I started just sending Jaylen Brown left, like wherever he was on the floor. And after I did it a couple of times, Mike was like, you know what? We've been wanting to make this adjustment, but was afraid. Let's just try it. And we tried it and it worked. But again, that was an instance of a coach being like, I don't know if we could really make that adjustment. Although they had the adjustment in their mind, I don't know if we could really make that because it's against our defensive rules. And then the adjustment was made and we won the series. So I think it's a combination of both of those. Yes, your players have to be capable of taking those adjustments and making those switches, but a coach has to also be able to identify his adjustment. And when I watch these playoffs, most of these coaches actually can't make solid adjustments. So I think that's the most underrated thing.
We want to be clear on the Draymond Green show. That is not a shot at Mike Brown.
No, not at all. Not at all. That's never a shot at Mike Brown. Shoot, Mike Brown, one of the ghosts to me, especially when it comes to that defensive side of the ball. Mike Brown gets it done. So, no, not a shot at Mike Brown at all. Never will be. It ain't coming from here. Not on this show.
Last question from I Hate CEP. Mavs or Clippers, Dre? Who wins this series?
CEP, Mavs or Clippers?
I was a little bit of at a loss with that username as well. But Mavs or Clippers, who you got?
Mavs or Clippers win the series. I got the Mavs. I think they're going to be more consistent in their play, especially, like I said, you just don't know with Kawhi. I got the Mavs winning this series. And if I'm honest, I actually got them winning the series in six. The only person who can change that outcome is Russell Westbrook. That's it. No, I didn't say James Harden. No, I did not say Paul George. And the reason I didn't say those guys is because it's on Russell Westbrook to put the battery pack in those guys back and have them playing at the level that they played at in game four in order to take that win in Dallas. And so I got Dallas winning it. But like I said, the only person can change and nobody will ever give him credit, but he's going to get credit on this show because he is the person that wills that team. Russell Westbrook is the only person that can change that outcome. But yeah, I got Dallas. And with that, that is a wrap from this episode of the Draymond Green Show. Be back later this week to tap in with y'all. We shall see if my theory on Jalen Brunson being ball dominant can go by the wayside or if my theory on Jalen Brunson becomes true. However, I just want to state this. My theory on Jalen Brunson can be true and they still can win, i.e. Jalen Brunson doesn't dominate the ball as much and they win. That doesn't mean I was wrong. I'm not saying the Knicks is going to lose, although I got Philly. But I think Jalen Brunson need to take a little step back as far as dominating the ball. But he being great, so who can complain? Another 40 piece. That's a wrap from this episode of the Draymond Green Show. Peace.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like,
whoa.
And,
hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.